Good evening, folks. This is The Weird Part, and I am your host, Vincent Shrewell. This is going to be a solo episode tonight, but I think it might be one that you'll find interesting. And I was about to say, if you are of a certain age, but it might be interesting to those who haven't necessarily heard that much about this topic. I originally had planned this for New Year's Eve, but circumstances went a different direction. And so I'm bringing it now. The most famous New Year's Eve, I'll say, in the last 1,000 years, was 1999, as the world faced the crisis of Y2K. And I just want to discuss what that potential crisis was, what it was not, my personal memories of preparing for it, and perhaps why things didn't go to a complete disaster, common misconceptions, and what significance it has to the current day. So yes, we're going to be talking Y2K from the beginning. I mean, well, yes, as close as possible from the beginning to the day coming and January 1st, 2000 happening and how that all went down. So yes, Y2K memories will be this episode. I think you'll find it interesting. At least I hope so. So yes, I'm going to use some sources and a lot of just my own personal recollections, because it was a huge deal to me at the time. And we'll get to that. But I think this might be one that you're going to like. So, before we get started, I have to give credit where credit is due. There's an absolutely excellent documentary on Y2K available on HBO, Hulu, Prime, probably some other places. It's called Time Bomb Y2K, and I watched it on HBO, and it's absolutely excellent. Serendipitously, coincidentally, had planned on doing a Y2K memories episode anyway, and then suddenly this movie came out, and it was perfect timing, and it's all archival footage from 1999 and the very beginning of 2000, and it describes what things were like at that time, just to kind of bring the people who, you know, I have listeners of all ages. I have listeners who are older than me, but I also have listeners that are my kids' age, probably younger. And just to bring everybody kind of up to speed, so we're all on the same page of what Y2K was, I'll try in a very brief and non-boring manner to describe the situation. Throughout the 90s, and really, well, before that, 70s, 80s, 90s, in the 90s, people began to notice it was going to be a problem. But those who write computer code had only been using two digits for the year. So this has gone back for decades. I said 70s, but I'm sure it was before that. Probably, if I had to guess, I would say since the 50s, they had only written code that involved dates in two digits for the day, two digits for the month, two digits for the year. And the fact that it would eventually reach the year 2000 at first wasn't even considered. Then gradually people started to think, hey, we are getting closer to 2000. There's going to be a problem if the computers all think it's 1900. And this was a very real problem. And it wasn't dealt with immediately. It was postponed and postponed and postponed. Then started getting into the 90s, and people who were in the know about technology and how by the 90s our society was immersed in it, not as much as we are now, but still to a significant degree, began to realize that no, we have a real problem. And the reason it's called Y2K is just an abbreviation for year 2000. Okay. That problem had to be fixed in advance, or there could be severe repercussions. And a lot of things by, and for those who weren't there, even in the late 90s, a lot of things still did run by computer. Also, and I need to digress just slightly, there was an incredible level of angst as we approached the year 2000. People were acting weird. There was concerns in the religious communities that maybe Christ would return, maybe the rapture would occur, maybe a lot of things. There was a book written. Now, this predates Y2K by a few years, but there was a book written, and I believe he was a very sincere man. But he was completely wrong, obviously. And that was the book was titled 1994 question mark. And it was written by Harold E. Camping, a evangelist and Bible teacher, and he predicted the return of Christ for a specific date in 1994. I do remember reading that book in 1993, and that he did give himself, he went into some really obscure biblical passages that involve numbers, and he did some sort of numerology that he believed he could pick that date. Well, when the 1994 date came and went, he adjusted it slightly within 1994. It was pretty clear 1994 was not going to be the end of the world, the return of Christ, Judgment Day, any of the above. He then, I do remember even in the book, that he gave himself a second option that it might be 2011. And I don't know how many people recall this, but there was a huge campaign by his organization that May 21st, 2011 was going to be the end of the world. Jesus Christ was going to return and it was going to be Judgment Day. And when that didn't happen, it was definitely, I believe Mr. Camping was completely sincere. I don't believe he was any kind of a, the televangelist Connors that people are pretty familiar with. And I think it really hurt him deeply that he was wrong. But, and he didn't live all that long thereafter. Like, I think about a year and a half after that, he had died. And he later apologized for making the predictions in the first place. But I digress. I digress for a reason. There was just a ton of millennial angst, you might call it. Everybody, just because of the number 2000 coming up, Many people seemed to think something big is going to happen. And Y2K, the computer problem of Y2K, which was very real, was absolutely a real thing, played into that too. And as it's documented in the documentary, there were a lot of people who had a lot of worst case scenarios. But most of those were not based on nothing. There was a real race to fix this problem. And I don't have the source right here, but just in America, okay, this is a worldwide problem, but just in the United States, federal, state, and local governments spent $100 billion, and that's in 1990s money, to prevent this. And private industry spent four times that. So, with the investment of $500 trillion, unadjusted for inflation, in 1990s money, $500 trillion, in America alone, they were able to stop it. There was very few disruptions because of Y2K. There weren't none. There were isolated incidents where things happened. And I recall specifically news reports that the United States lost all its spy satellites for a few hours, which that was a different time, and Boris Yeltsin was president of Russia, and nothing bad happened, but that could have gone very differently as well. And that, there were real world incidents where things did happen. And I guess there's really two things that I want to get across in this episode. One is that until it happened, until the clock struck midnight on December 31st, 1999, nobody really knew what was going to happen. I can't stand when I hear people say that they knew Y2K was fake and nothing was going to happen. One, it wasn't fake. It took $500 trillion to in the United States alone to stop it from happening, which was a fantastic success. Okay. But there was a very real threat. And as far as you knew, no, I assure you did not know. If the president didn't know and the governor didn't know and police chiefs and sheriffs and mayors and all across the United States didn't know, you didn't know either. Okay. You guessed and you happened to be correct, but it was a guess. And if you didn't prepare at all, I'm sorry, but I'm going to be a little judgmental. If you didn't prepare at all, then you had some dumb luck. Good for you. But you didn't know because nobody knew. That's one. The other is, this was a successful example of seeing a problem coming and stopping it before it happens, which is a lot better than repairing it after it happens. And I think that that carries some relevance to our time. And thirdly, I just kind of wanted to reminisce about the millennial angst that was going on at that time, and how much it was in the popular culture that something big is going to happen. And that I feared people's reaction much more than I feared the technological issues. That, I mean, we had a functioning legal system and trash collection and electricity and running water before we had computers. We can We can make that stuff work if we have to without computers. It'd be a hell of a transition, but we could figure that out. What I was concerned with was the expectation that something was going to happen could create something happening and some incident of mass hysteria. If, for example, the lights went out in a major city because of purely normal, non-computer related technical problems where, a tree knocks over the big cable and all the lights go out. If that happened, and it happened on Y2K, I think so many people would have absolutely freaked out. And I was much more concerned about rioting and looting and just chaos than I was about, oh, can't get the computer started. We can deal with that. But the social implications were to me a lot scarier. At that time, I was working for the Milwaukee County Sheriff's Department. I was a deputy, and we spent many hours getting classes and taking different steps to prepare for Y2K. It was treated completely 100% real. And as a sort of possible disaster that we had never faced before. If there's a tornado coming in, well, we've dealt with tornadoes many times. If you live in a place that gets hit by hurricanes, you know what that's like and you know what to do and how to prepare. This was something that the world had never faced before. And hopefully we'll never face anything like that again, but it was a new experience for the entire human race. We didn't know what was going to happen. And, fear of the unknown is a real thing, obviously. And going into it, nobody knew what was going to happen. And the sheriff's department invested a lot of time, effort, and money in preparing for what might happen. We learned how to operate everything in the jail without electricity, even though there was a backup generator. But we found out, where all the routes to move inmates were without needing elevators, which we presumed would not be working, and using these big old-fashioned metal keys instead of pushing buttons, which wouldn't work. And then the department had stockpiled a significant amount of food and water to feed people incarcerated in the county jail. But that could only last for a finite time, which I think was estimated to be about a week. But we had, thousands of what are called MREs, meals ready to eat, these what are standard issue in the military. And we've just gotten surplus meals ready to eat and mass quantities of bottled water. And that's what we were going to have to do if this lasts, well, if this happened at all. Even if it lasted for one day, it would have been extremely significant. I distinctly recall the governor at the time, Tommy Thompson, phenomenally popular governor and elected five times in the state of Wisconsin. And he made the statement that we don't know if on December 31st at midnight, all the doors might open in the state prisons. Those were the kinds of things people were worried about. That might really happen if the electricity failed suddenly. Would the doors stay closed or were they not? And it's a very hard thing to test, So yes, it was 100% real. And it was, I know that LAPD built this huge bunker in case of rioting due to Y2K. The military had plans. Every level of government had a lot of planning. It was taken extremely seriously, and it should be. I would hope that if we face such a thing today, that we would be able to overcome partisan divisions and take this seriously and solve the problem before it hits. But I am not nearly that much of an optimist. 1999 was a very different time in American politics. And even though I think they personally hated each other, Bill Clinton and Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich could work together and address serious problems. That's something that really doesn't exist much anymore, which is really unfortunate because we won't have another Y2K, but we have situations coming up that if we started working on solving them now, they would be like Y2K. They would be non-emergencies, or more accurately put, prevented emergencies, where the emergency doesn't happen because you do the prepping. I'll get back to that in just a second. But speaking of prepping, yes, I had my own food supply, my own canned goods, my own bottled water, some guns. Thing is, crank radio that's also a flashlight that you just turn a crank. Yeah. Those type of things, because it's better to have that stuff sitting around and not use it than need it and not have it. And it's my philosophy. I don't take it to some ridiculous extreme, but it's always better to be prepared. And I confess that I'm not prepared enough right now. Something to work on in the new year. But yes, the old saying of, an ounce of prevention is better than a pound of cure is 1,000% correct. So yes, I definitely prepped for Y2K and was able to finagle a situation where I was at home when it actually happened and not assigned to the jail the next day. Found an outside assignment that I could work in a hospital where it would be a lot better if things really did go bad. So yes, as far as comparisons to today, let me just start with let's start with climate change. Now, I try to, this is not a political show. And this is where I go to get away from politics, okay? If you don't believe in climate change and reject the scientific consensus, we can still be friends. It's cool. But let's talk about something else, okay? Because I absolutely believe that climate change is real and is happening and is at a point where right now, if we take action, we can stop a lot of disastrous things from happening later. I believe that disastrous things are already happening as our weather system gets destabilized and seems to be less predictable each year. Climate change to me is a perfect example of another Y2K. if we take action now, we can really mitigate and almost eliminate all the worst things that could happen in the future. If we do nothing, then I think it's going to be really bad. We have a window of doing something right now. Unfortunately, we have political gridlock at practically every level. That means we're not going to do much of anything. Sorry, I'm not a motivational speaker, but the issue really does concern me. And I wish it wasn't so politically divisive. I remember when Republicans were environmentalists. I mean, somewhere, but I remember, for example, acid rain. Nobody argued that it wasn't a real thing. And I believe it was under President H.W. Bush Sr., that they passed some laws and basically got rid of acid rain. Around that same time, bipartisan laws were passed that dealt with the hole in the ozone layer, which has mostly healed up since we started regulating hydrofluorocarbons. So yes, these problems are solvable if we're willing to do that. But to solve a problem, first you have to accept that there is a problem. And, hopefully I'm overestimating how divided our society is, and that we can get it together in time enough to solve a lot of climate change issues before they get disastrous. I would recommend highly the 2021 film Don't Look Up, starring Leonardo DiCaprio and Jennifer Lawrence, which is a metaphor. These two astronomers detect that a meteor, a huge meteor, is coming towards the Earth, and they try to warn the powers that be, who completely ignore them. And I won't give all of it away, but it's well worth seeing. And yes, it's really about climate change. An excellent film, in my opinion. But that, to me, is very similar to Y2K. It's not going to happen tomorrow. Or I also recommend the film The Day After Tomorrow. But yes, if we take steps now, we don't have to suffer later. That's kind of what I'm getting at. The other issue that seems to parallel Y2K to me is the issue of solar flares. There was an incident called the Carrington event in September 1st and 2nd of 1859, where the sun, as it periodically does, had a large solar flare, which resulted in what is called a geomagnetic storm. Now, 1859, we weren't using much technology. Just as an aside, people did see things that were fantastic in the skies, like resembling the Northern Lights, but all of the world. So that was an interesting side effect. But what I'm referring to is the big technology at that time was the telegraph. And the telegraphs went nuts when hit by this geomagnetic storm. And some of the telegraph towers set fire, sparked it. Trying to say spraying sparks. That's what spraying sparks. Okay. Telegraph operators were shocked, like electrically shocked. A lot of the telegraph system just shut down completely. Other parts ran without using batteries in some kind of bizarre way. But it was a complete disruption of the high tech of the time. And most of the telegraphs in the United States stopped working. Okay. What would happen if that happened today? Now, I don't know to the full extent what safeguards might be in place, but I'm awfully concerned that they're not fully adequate. There was another similar sun solar flare causing a geomagnetic storm in on March 13th, 1989, that mostly hit, it did affect the American power grid and did affect radio all around the world, but it hit the hardest in the Canadian province of Quebec, where they completely lost power for at least 9 hours, from what I have read, and it may have been longer. It shut things completely down. And that wasn't even as large as the earlier Carrington event. So how prepared are we? I don't know, but whatever we're doing, we need to do more and make sure that it's enough. Okay. Because this is going to happen again. It is a predictable event, and we want to take care of it before it becomes a crisis. I don't know how many of you recall Hurricane Katrina in 2005. I recall it perfectly because I was, at that time, I was still a deputy, and we had some fascinating training about called incident command training, that how all of the different law enforcement agencies and fire departments and EMT units and all the different agencies are supposed to work together under this format. While they're teaching us how to do that, we're watching that not happen in New Orleans. And this complete cluster is taking place in New Orleans. And unfortunately, I mean, a significant number of people died, and even more lost their homes, lost everything. And there wasn't cooperation between the different local, state, and federal government agencies. It was a complete disaster. And this was a relatively predictable weather event. And yet, everybody was fumbling all over everything. It was a complete disaster for that city and the entire area. Again, this was a hurricane in Louisiana, not something freakishly unpredictable. But yet, the system wasn't in place to deal with it properly. It was kind of like the opposite of Y2K. Okay. It's important that we prepare. And I don't think that we as a society are doing nearly enough of that. Now, that's my opinion. And I'll get off the soapbox and we'll talk about some other stuff in just a second. But yes, I do think that's important. Also, I just wanted to, especially for those who weren't there and don't remember it, to the excuse that maybe you weren't born, the really weird vibe that was going around as we approached Y2K, that millennial angst, that feeling that something big is happening. And there was a show. In fact, one of my favorite television shows in of all of them, called Millennium, starring Lance Henriksen as a retired FBI psychological profiler, and it focuses on kind of, without, getting into a whole detail of the different seasons and the plots and subplots, but it deals essentially with people going crazy because 2000 is approaching. And that was very real. There was just this feeling in the air that something was going to happen. I remember seeing in a movie theater the Spike Lee film, Summer of Sam, which describes the time when Berkowitz, the Son of Sam killer, was active. And without going into a total rabbit hole on how he may not have been alone and what that may mean, the film isn't really about Berkowitz. He's only portrayed for a couple of minutes, but it's about how society reacts to threats and to fear and to a killer on the loose. But it could be to a lot of different events. And in the film, everybody has their own theory about who the killer is, and people are tempted to take vigilante action. And at some point, so my wife and I are watching this in a movie theater, and at some point, there's a depiction of a full-on riot and looting, and people are busting out store windows. And I told her, this is what I'm worried about Y2K. I'm not worried about the computers. Okay. We're just going to need a lot more manila folders and staplers. Okay. We ran a court system before computers. We can run one without computers. It's going to be a cluster, but we can do it. What I'm worried about is people have been told something big is going to happen. That might spark something big happening. It might be very bad. And that was really my main concern. And there were people coming into the jail for bizarre Y2K related crimes. And I've talked about this in a previous podcast, that there was a man related to the Nasida Shrine, which is a, oh boy, a ultra Catholic, not accepted by the Vatican, shrine in southwestern Wisconsin, where a woman claimed to have Marian apparitions and many other mystic experiences back in the late 40s, and was referred to at the time as the American Fatima. Well, that's continued to be a highly weird area. And there was a fellow who was connected with that movement who, in the year 1999, was stealing religious statues out of churches and stockpiling them because he believed that a comet was going to come in Y2K right around that same time and destroy much of the earth. He wanted these sacred icons to be protected. Yeah, things like that were happening. People were just getting highly weird. And that sort of, it was like a societal wide anxiety that was erupting in different ways. And that same time, you have things like the Heaven's Gate mass suicide, where, and this took place in March 97, so it predates Y2K, but it's still in the late 90s and very much in the zeitgeist of that time. And this is a cult that had existed since the mid-70s, and most of, almost all of them took, which is about 50 people, it's 49 people, took their lives in March 97, believing that the Hale-Bopp comet which was coming past the Earth, had a spaceship behind it, and that they would ascend, their souls would ascend to the spaceship, and they would leave their bodies behind and go to the level above human with the, for lack of a better term, with the aliens. And, dozens of people believed in this enough to kill themselves, and including their leader, who completely believed what he was teaching, Marshall Applewhite. But yes, joined his followers in all taking their own lives. It was terrible. And that was an eruption of, in my opinion, that was an eruption of all the anxiety and the expectation that of the late 90s. That's something that's difficult to describe to those who weren't there, but it really felt like something big was going to happen. And then we went through Y2K and nothing happened. However, a year and some change later, 9/11 happened. So something big did happen. And, for those who were kind of nitpicking, the millennium didn't actually start with 2000, it started with 2001. So in the first year of the millennium, something big did happen. So yeah, there you are. Thanks for listening to me reminisce about Y2K and speculate on its possible meanings. And I hope you enjoyed this. We get something out of it. As always, thank you for listening and good night.